Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast. We're going to be discussing a retrospective film. This is Andrei Tarkovsky's 1972 sci-fi classic Solaris. There is currently a Andrei Tarkovsky retrospective taking place on the Curzon Home Cinema. If you're interested, and we decided to pick his probably most popular film as our film of the week. So I'm Sam Howlett, and as always, I'm joined by Helen Seymour.
Hello.
And Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
I couldn't decide which of the two of you to introduce first.
Yeah.
I went with Helen in the end because I feel like she's been here longest. And yeah. Also, she got here before you.
Yeah, that's true. I was late today.
So, Solaris, I'm sure many of you have heard of it before. It's often regarded as one of the greatest sci-fi films of all time. So, it stars Donatas Banionis as Chris Kelvin. He's a psychologist sent to a space station which is currently hovering over the fictional planet of Solaris, and he's been sent there in order to discover what's caused the crew to go insane, essentially. But while he's there, all the crew are plagued by, should we say, hallucinations, just
kind of
strange appearances.
New,
without revealing too much, let's just say it's that. It's a long film.
It's incredibly long.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a, not a trial, but it's just,
you've got to set aside
a lot of time.
Especially going from our nice 90-minute fast-paced film of Love and Friendship last week, 2 hours 45. You don't often get films that long anymore.
No, yeah.
Other than The Hobbit.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that, though.
Yeah, me neither.
So I think there's two approaches to this kind of film, really. So on one hand, it's an art film, and it's a philosophical exploration of human consciousness. Mm-hmm. Essentially, but also that it's a science fiction narrative entertainment film, I guess. It's set in a spaceship, there's extraterrestrial type beings, it's a coherent, you know, it's a coherent narrative. So I was just wondering how you thought the film sort of balances those two aspects of, on one hand being an art film, and on one hand being a form of entertainment and a telling of a story. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Sam, can't art be entertainment?
Can do. And but
Helen's,
do you think,
nailed it in one.
Yeah. And that's the end of this week's episode. Okay, but do you think this film was an entertaining work of art, or did you think it will only, do you think this film only works as art? Or do you think you could happily sit and watch this film and be entertained by it?
It's entertaining.
Okay.
And it's art.
But it's also not an easygoing watch.
No.
Like most sci-fi films, I think you put on, and, you know, it's kind of like escapism for a few hours. Whereas I think this film, like, addresses very heavily kind of like the meaning of life, basically.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I don't know. I felt it more, to be more a questioning piece of art than a piece of escapist entertainment. But
Well, you've changed it now.
Have
you've
I?
You've defined it as escapist entertainment.
Oh, sorry, Helen. Okay, true. Maybe I don't always need to escape when I'm entertained.
Yeah, I found it to be, I was surprised actually about how sort of sci-fi it was, and kind of relative mainstream sci-fi as well, in a way.
Yeah.
Like, the certain things, it reminded me a lot of, well, I think we'll talk about this later on a bit, but certain modern popular science fiction films are very much influenced by this, I think.
I really agree.
Definitely, yeah.
And also like Doctor Who.
Yes, no. Sure, there's a lot of Doctor Who there. Yeah. I think, but so should we talk about the art aspects of this film or the science fiction first? If we're going to separate them, what do you think?
Let's talk about the art.
The art, okay.
I enjoyed the reads at the beginning.
Yes, beautiful opening. Mm-hmm. I think a way to describe this film is beautiful, actually.
Yeah, it really is.
Really striking.
Yeah, the cinematography is really gorgeous.
Absolutely. So as an art film, it's really ambiguous, I think, which is often the case with art films, that it doesn't pander to its audience, doesn't like tell you what's happening. You have to work it out.
Yeah, I spent the first 15 to 20 minutes having absolutely no idea what was going on.
Yeah,
like none
absolutely.
At all. I don't know about you guys.
I would like to extend that to an hour. I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah, it was very confusing to begin with, but like in a good way. I don't think you like feel out of your depths
no,
of it because
sure.
you're on the journey
and
with
you
them.
You can follow the thread, but in general, you don't get the whole message of
yeah,
the film
sure.
very quickly. And I think it's good. I think that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also, I think as well, this whole thing about characters' motivations. It's very unclear what the any of the leads really want. And they do things that they wouldn't do in a mainstream film just because it's not clear why they're doing these things. And it doesn't really make sense entirely for their character, or what we know of their character. But again, it's about that idea of being ambiguous and then the audience work things out on their own. That the reasons he does, that Chris does certain things is, and we may question that and think, why would he do that when he's just done this? But I think that's part of it, that you're thrown into the deep end with this film.
And everything's quite uneasy.
Very uneasy, yeah. It's almost horror at times, I think.
I think so. Yeah. I was scared.
Really? He's actually scared?
You know how you know. I mean, not terrified, but I was a bit like, oh, this might go a horrible direction now.
Yeah, very could potentially. I think as well that it's more about psychology over action as well, which is very much the case of an art film. I don't know if we said this while recording or before, that not a lot really happens ultimately.
Yeah, no, not a lot happens. It's a lot of talking rather than action, I think.
And there's a lot of like philosophical conversations going on, which is nice to see rather than someone running down the hallway with a gun.
Yeah,
it's nice to just sit and watch this and listen to interesting ideas.
And they are interesting, which is, you know, it's not one of those films that just has a lot of sci-fi garbage.
Absolutely, yeah.
It doesn't actually mean anything.
But it's not really that sci-fi, really, the things they're discussing. They're kind of very human and very... I don't know, like...
Hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. But did you... I think I found at times it was a little bit heavy-handed with its kind of morality.
I felt that a bit. I felt like sometimes those conversations, as impressively written as they were, they did feel very on the nose. And it's the thing that the film does so well often is show, don't tell.
Yes.
I feel like that was them telling us.
Yeah, I felt that quite a lot of the way
that was them saying, oh, this is this idea, rather than that being explored through the narrative and being revealed through... like actions and things within the plot, if that makes sense.
It's yeah, definitely jumbled. Agree. But I mean, I've also loved how much it's made me think about those things.
Certainly, yeah. So in terms of it being a sci-fi, I just want to ask, are you two, where do you stand on sci-fi? Are you, I really don't like sci-fi, or are you more like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Because I feel like sometimes sci-fi and horror are the kind of two genres where you either love them or hate them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Helen, for example, is not a horror fan.
But I often like the ideas behind the horror films.
Okay.
I just, visually, I find it stays in my head too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't enjoy that. But I like all the ideas behind
it. Right, okay, sure.
So I could read a scary story. It's more just the visual stuff somehow.
Okay.
But yes, I know what you're saying by that. They are the two that kind of people really
quite polarising. Because I feel like comedies, like, it'd be weird if someone said, oh, I don't like comedy, really.
Yeah.
Whereas there are a lot of people, I'm sure, oh no, I wouldn't see that because I don't really like sci-fi.
I would say I probably come from a point of ignorance with sci-fi
more
than anything else. It's not a genre I've delved into a lot. To be honest with you, I do always enjoy it when I do watch it. I think I just always... It's not my go-to.
Yeah, okay. Well, because I thought this film... Well, it takes nearly... like 40 minutes for them to actually get to space.
A really long time.
Yeah, nearly
long
an hour.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot more interesting... when they got to space.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that first hour is probably the hardest part to get through, really.
And there's lots of very, very, very long shots that don't serve a huge purpose, would you say?
I think perhaps. I think that there's a lot of... I mean, the film's very existential, and existentialism often involves people looking sadly at nature.
Yes.
Which is how the film opens.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful nature.
It is beautiful nature, and it does... Yeah, it perfectly sets up Chris to be in some form of existential crisis. And it does that very well without having someone, a character, go, oh, he's having an existential crisis.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it takes a while to actually get into space. But once it did, I was surprised about how sci-fi it went. Like, it was a spaceship, you know, it's a different planet. But just there's also really subtleties, I think, that they managed to weave in into the earlier part. You obviously have the video where they explain what's happened on Solaris and things like that. But you also have the boy who has never seen a horse before. And he says he doesn't really know what that species is. And I thought that's quite interesting that it's, you know, that this is a different world from our own. Obviously it's Earth, but it's in the future.
Yeah.
Just something subtle like that. You think, okay, this is different from what we know.
Good point.
But without it being hover cars or flying machines or anything like that. So it's our world, but it's in the not too distant future.
Yes.
What's your take on sci-fi?
Oh, I mean, I've seen like Star Wars. I'm not a huge like Star Trek fan or anything. I'm not like a diehard, but I do enjoy this kind of more cerebral science fiction. And when I was trying to think of what films this reminded me of, all of them I actually really love. So like Ex Machina, it reminded me of slightly.
I love that.
Yeah, that was a great film.
So I think it's just the idea. So it's quite claustrophobic, this film, and it's also... there's a strange female character in the film that kind of is the main focal point, and you're not sure of their motivations. That's very much the same in Ex Machina.
It's exactly the same, I thought, with that film when not watching this.
Also Interstellar as well, where you've got this, it starts on Earth and the male lead character leaves his family, and I loved it as well that Chris sort of accepts the fact that his dad will probably die.
Because
he goes up there, which
I'm going to go ahead and say Interstellar, that bit in Interstellar might have been sort of heavily inspired by that notion.
Very much so.
I might be wrong, but...
I think you're right. I think there's a lot of Interstellar in this. I mean, just the design as well.
Absolutely.
And the planet they go to in Interstellar, which I can't remember if it even has a name, but the planet they go to is entirely water-based.
Mm.
Very similar to Solaris. But I think the big comparison is actually 2001, which is made 4 years prior to this. I find a lot of similarities. Although, interestingly enough, Tarkovsky said he didn't see 2001 before he made this. So the similarities are coincidental.
He must find that so annoying.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely there. Like, and then he'll be like, and no one would believe him. Why is he?
I'm not sure I do.
So annoying.
There was so many. Yeah, there was a lot of very similarity. Like the design of the spaceship's similar. And it's the fact it's very slow and isn't completely a straightforward story, isn't a straightforward narrative as such.
And there's bits that you're not 100% sure
what's real, what's really going on. And there's also a really weird example that one of the characters thinks he can see a giant baby, a giant child, which happens at the end of 2001. There's a giant baby. So I was like, that's such a weird coincidence, but we'll pass it off as a coincidence. We're not going to accuse Tarkovsky of plagiarism.
No, we are not.
There's also something I really liked as well. It's the on the spaceship, one of the characters puts like paper over the air fence to mimic the sound of leaves, which I thought is a nice little kind of sci-fi moment there. This idea that they're in a place that's so sterile and futuristic and technologically advanced that they have to do this to make themselves feel back at home with nature.
That was a really sad moment
at the beginning.
Yeah.
Helen.
Full circle, absolutely.
That was really sad, actually. I was kind of thinking about, you know, when you are homesick or you go away and you, like, the things you look forward
things,
to, little things you do,
that was a really great moment.
The kind of human nature of it all.
Yeah, certainly. So, no, I think it balances art and entertainment well in that respect. Mm-hmm. And, like, a very much a slow art film, but also with sci-fi visuals. What did you think about the visuals? Did you think they held up?
What, to today?
Yeah, to today, for today's standards, what the planet looks like, the shots of the spacecraft and the space station. How do you think? Were you ever unconvinced, or did you think it pulled it off?
Just about. It was okay.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing too over the top. I thought it was all quite subtle, but.
Yeah,
sort of CGI.
There were some, slight issues, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously things where we're looking at as some people in 2016 and go, oh, that's a bit clunky,
the wires.
But I think overall, I think you can look past that and suspend your disbelief, definitely.
Definitely, yeah. So in terms of the historical context of the film, a lot of people think it's like a Cold War type, not quite allegory, but you both seem very interested in that. Just little bits about, so I think about the space race.
Yeah.
Soviet cosmonauts, and the fact that a lot of the film revolves around radiation, and like people saw that as kind of a, you know, we'll mirroring about, of like nuclear weapons and weapons testing, and the fact that it seemed to me, I don't know if I'm right in this, that they fired radiation at the planet, and then the planet kind of almost got revenge on them by giving them these, you know, the figures that
operation.
They see, which kind of always kind of, you know, the the repercussions of playing around with playing God.
I understand.
And also in the, because there was a 2002 remake of this film.
Yes, well, yes, absolutely. George Clooney. Clooney.
Yeah.
Cloontang. As I've never called him before.
Well, we all will from now.
And I haven't seen that film, but the trailer for that, its tagline is like, "What you fear becomes real." So, which is different. This film is subtler.
That sounds a lot more Hollywood, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It didn't look great. But
yeah,
it's
the
that
remake
kind of thing about karma and things coming
back. Yeah, definitely. What you mess with messes back with you. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, though. So the remake, 2002, directed by Steven Soderbergh. It's about half the running time of this. It's about 90 minutes or so. Apparently it's more faithful to the source material as well.
Yeah, because the source material starts off in space. There's no pre-home time in that one.
Yeah, and also it's more about the idea of second chances rather than exploring humanity, which I think this film touches upon, the idea of you get a second chance, without spoiling it, getting a second chance. But apparently that film is, and there's more of a romance to that film.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
I thought like this film was quite romantic.
Definitely, I saw that as well. Yeah.
I think it's overarching.
Quite some nice tender moments,
yeah. Yeah, very much about love and how that can make and break things.
Yeah, well, there was one moment where they gravity's turned off and they're both floating. And I thought that was a really nice moment, actually, just these two characters sort of just floating together. Yeah, really beautiful scene.
And that didn't look clunky.
No, that looked really well. Yeah. Also as well, I love the fact that these guys look like just normal guys in space.
Yeah.
They didn't look like George Clooney.
No, they definitely didn't.
They were just like, you know, there's the phrase they use, people use about alien, like truckers in space, which I think is very much here. Just these aren't astronaut like Buzz Lightyear type figures in space. These are just normal guys that happen to be in space.
They're a bit dirty.
A bit grotty.
Shower.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Okay, so yeah.
Can I talk about the trousers?
Go. Oh yeah, well, we have a response on Twitter. This is from @heart_band, who says, "Do you think we'll be that understatedly stylish in the future?"
Yes, Helen. Because I am going to launch my own range of tight trousers with black lines on it that sort of look like suspenders for men.
Cool. I didn't even notice these trousers, Helen.
They're so great.
I'm going to have to rewatch all 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Just and I was just like, you are on fleek. Trousers.
Well, I was paying a lot of attention to his yellow string vest, which was, I think, slightly less stylish than the trousers.
Did it remind you a little bit of Girls?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, brilliant.
And look, she gets from Laird.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that bit. That was quite distracting.
I would love it if this is where Lena Dunham got this wrong.
Like, we've seen that and gone, I am having one of them.
Oh, yes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But he did have some very stylish pajamas on, with the embossed like initials on the pocket. I feel like I'd like a pair of those.
It's a bit like Her, which is another film.
Great film. Oh, that's another good one. I didn't think of that, actually.
Yeah, he's got great trousers in that.
Yeah, very high.
High, and then sort of a Velcro, and he'll sort of wear the same. No more jean.
But you were against the jean, Helen.
Well,
I just think it's...
just think it's done.
It's probably done. We've by been that there, point. Yeah. And they look comfy.
I think that's another thing about the sci-fi being subtle, is that they're not wearing overtly outlandish outfits, but there's just a slight difference. So you recognise it as Earth, but still not the Earth that we live in, which was a nice little touch.
While we're talking about attire, there was a moment when he first lands on the spaceship that was like a public service announcement from the 70s about why you must tie your shoelaces. It's so weird. It was like a 2 minute scene of him like falling over your shoelace and then tying it up. And I could just see the voiceover of like, Timmy didn't tie his shoelace that day.
I think these are the reasons that the film was so long. The two minutes he takes tying his shoelace up.
Yeah, it's all like, what did that mean?
I think it's just nice little details to maybe just to immerse you in the world a bit more. Like, you wouldn't see George Clooney spending that long to tie his shoelaces.
It's true, it shows you how things have changed. We don't have the patience for that kind of thing anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, now I love that scene.
It's the best scene in the film.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to spoiler territory in a second, but Helen, do you have something to add about a painting, I believe?
A long old shot of a painting in this. All right. I don't know if you remember it, maybe you've just thought, what's that?
Well, I'm going to enlighten me now.
Snow.
Yeah, yeah.
And a woman is looking at it for a long time. Remind me again, Tarkovsky, am I saying that right? He loves this painting. It was also in... The Mirror by him, and Lars von Trier whacked it in Melancholia. And Ray Anderson used it as inspiration for, Roy Anderson, sorry, used it as inspiration for A Pigeon Sat on a Branch, reflecting on existence. And so it's this scene, you can just kind of Google it if you haven't seen the film and you're just interested in this bit because it's not a spoiler, of hunters returning from a hunt and they look down on figures on an icy lake. And there's a mountain range in the background, which was inspired... It's Peter Bruegel who did this in 1565. And the point of the painting is that it's got the hunters who have returned with little food because it's been a very harsh winter. And then you've got the skaters down on the ice below who are... still living in the sense of live in terms of love and family and friendship, and then you have that compared to the hunters who are failing to live in terms of thriving, so that's like food, they don't have much food. And the way the hunters sort of look out on this scene, it was kind of similar to this idea of envisioning what you can't have or what has been lost. So that either perfectly, a childhood or a loss of a time when you didn't have to worry about food or struggling to survive in a real sense. But the people on the lake seem to be surviving on this line, and they're literally on another plane, which is kind of clever too, seem to be surviving in despite the harsh conditions, which is
perfectly ties into the ideas of
what has been lost and reflecting what has been lost. Bang on, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Very clever.
That's really interesting, actually. So, what whereabouts that was that in that before he goes into space? The painting?
No, it's on the ship. There's loads of. There's also a painting of Icarus on the ship. Boy who
flew too close to the sun. So, it's you're saying that the painting's on the station. I thought the design of the interior of the space station was really interesting because it has nothing like any sci-fi film I've seen. Usually they're very cold, sterile, often like they look like the Apple store where everything's white or like everything's metallic and like workstations, but like loads of weird buttons and lights. This was just like a normal interior of a house sometimes on the spacecraft, which was a nice little touch, I think, just to differentiate it from.
Yeah, and I think it kind of shows you how long those guys had been up there.
Yeah, they've made it their home.
Yeah.
I also liked that there was a complete tip as well in some parts. It's like there's just two of them that they've given up. Yeah. One more thing as well about the look of the film. So usually in films set in space, like Alien, for example, there's a lot of darkness. This film's so light. There's so much light, which I thought was in... Because usually you have... like pitch black outside the window just to show you how far away from home they are. But this one is a lot of light.
Yeah, there's constantly light coming through. Yeah. And
I think there's even a point where he comments on, there's a lot of light here, considering we're in space.
Mm.
And yeah, that did strike me as quite different as for a mm-hmm. science fiction film.
There's also a really beautiful scene of the woman against a golden sort of shimmery light in the evening time, which again, you don't get that kind of sunset moment in space films.
Definitely.
We'll stop calling her the woman in a minute.
When we can spoil. There's just so much to spoil in this film, isn't there?
There is. All right, should we get to the spoiler section now?
Let's do it.
Just one more quote from Twitter. This is from @MartinTheLegend.
Great.
Martin the Legend. I think it's far superior to Kubrick's 2001. Tarkovsky's best work despite his unhappiness with it. So that's two interesting statements there. One that he thinks is better than 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is quite a bold claim.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Tarkovsky was not very happy with this film. It's actually his least favourite of all his films. Yeah, it's one of his most famous.
Mm.
So anyway, if you do check out the film. It is an absolute masterpiece of the genre, I think. So check it out on Curzon Home Cinema. And then come back and listen to the final part of the podcast where we're going to spoil the hell out of it. So, the woman is the apparition of his dead wife who commits suicide.
Yeah. That's pretty heavy going, isn't it?
Yeah, really heavy.
And she doesn't just commit suicide once. I mean, she does it in real life and then she comes back and again and again.
She keeps coming back to life because, she can't die.
Yeah.
She's essentially immortal.
Like Torchwood.
There we go, another reference. Also, there's a John Carpenter film called Starman, which stars Jeff Bridges, who as an alien who takes the form of the female character's dead husband.
Mm.
So that's also playing into, really must have been heavily influenced by this idea as well.
So, also, Chris sees his dead wife. What does he do? Wax him in a space shuttle.
Yeah.
Just get rid of him.
Yeah.
Here you go, love.
But that's kind of the horror aspect of it as well.
Yeah, no, that's where I got scared.
Seeing someone who you know to be dead and to have died in quite a traumatic way.
I think he handles it quite well. I'm just going to pop it. No,
he is quite calm about
it. Okay, so he sends her into space. I'll give you that it's a quite an extreme reaction, but he's quite calm. He's not like, who the hell are you? What are you doing? Because if I saw someone that was supposed to be dead, I think I'd freak out.
Mm.
He just quite calmly sends her
off. Close the door. I'm coming too. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite harsh.
Extreme reaction.
I know there's a horrible bit because he's then stuck in the room.
With the rocket fuel, yeah.
Yeah.
But that is the idea of the dead lover coming back to life was really interesting and really well handled, I thought. And it's the main focus of the film, yes. I think. The idea of the past coming back to haunt you. And also, as you spoke about earlier, the idea of getting a second chance with someone.
Yeah.
I also love the idea of the fact that the planet is a character in itself.
Yeah.
That the planet is like messing around with them, essentially.
I love
and
that.
And is probing stuff. Them and is trying thinking, how will these humans react if I do this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really great. Really interesting. Really, just a great sci-fi concept, I thought.
So should we explain a bit? Because I don't think we properly
go
explained.
For it.
So the planet... Oh, great.
You were just opted yourself to do that one.
So the planet is sort of, like you say, messing with them.
Yeah.
And seems to be sort of taking their dreams, their visions from their sleep.
I think they say it does. Yeah, while they're sleeping, the planet can go into their minds and make people from their past appear real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they kind of, it sort of uses that as a blueprint, and like you say, then in the day, or actually at night as well, appears them on the ship.
Yeah, in physical form as well. They're physically there as well. Mm-hmm. They're not just, like I mentioned earlier, hallucinations. They're not. They're genuinely there.
Yeah.
He says one of the scientists says that they're made from a neutrinos, I believe, which is a different kind of
opposite of atoms or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that. So there is some science involved in this. Some science fiction, obviously.
Apparently, a good every sci-fi film when they're trying to use an explanation. It's neutrinos.
Yeah. So the idea of
my trousers are going to be called the neutrinos.
Excellent
That's
work.
Perfect, Helen.
Carry on.
Yeah, I love the idea that she... the deer. I love the idea.
Love that deer.
Do you remember the scene with the deer, everyone? The idea that the past will recreate itself and that time will eventually fix itself. Like the fact that this woman is back and she should not be back and essentially kills herself again because she's not meant to exist. And
time
this is just going to...
Yeah, stuff.
It's just happen all over and over again.
It's a really bleak kind of existence, though, to know how miserable you are and that you can't end the cycle of... And for him as well.
Mm. Yeah, he has to watch his wife die
over and over
again.
Yeah.
Loads of Doctor Who in that.
There is, yeah.
Doctor Who has just been all over this film.
Also, she's just... I've never seen someone freak out so much when they can't open a door.
She takes it to another level.
Push it the other way. No!
Rips through it. And it tears it down.
He opens the other way. Oh, she's so extreme. She just pushes herself through this door and she's all cut and... You left the room!
But she can heal, so it's all fine.
You can then find out she can heal.
Yeah, that was a weird... That was a strange... I feel like that wasn't 100% necessary to have her...
Well, her healing...
It just felt like it added another layer to... of not confusion, just something else to complicate her... The nature of this... this thing.
Ability.
The visitor, they call it. It felt just... Not too much, it was just slightly another thing that we've got to question and think about that isn't explained.
And it could have worked for her to have scars. Yeah. It just didn't need to.
But she did have that scar, didn't she? Where she'd actually killed herself with the injection.
Yeah.
That was never going to heal.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think... The big question now. What's the Tarkovsky saying by having the dead wife come back?
Well, the film for me just felt so much about like your conscience and your guilt and shame and all of that kind of stuff, and it felt like that planet was sort of just like plaguing the people there constantly with that, like they couldn't escape it. So I don't know what he's trying to say about that, whether or not he just wants to explore those themes or if he's got a deeper message with it that I haven't quite got yet. Don't know about you guys.
I don't know. I think there's some grief going on in there.
Definitely.
Like
I think
an
it's
analysis
a,
of grief and the idea that you, when someone dies, it's the death that you get stuck replaying over and over again, sort of as a way to feel. It's the strongest memory for a while, so you use that to feel close to them, but then of course you're losing them over and over again. Yeah. And like you said before, the idea of a second chance and kind of what's the difference between if you could have them back but give things up, all those questions.
I think that's really well handled as well. And it's just the idea that you can't escape your grief. And I also can't, part of me thinks that the planet isn't real and that it's just this man is trapped now away from Earth, away from every single kind of distraction, and all he's got to think about is his dead wife, and so he sort of projects her onto the ship with him and he keeps seeing her dying over and over again,
and the force he's feeling is materializes as planet in his that's
definitely
really good reading. That's cool.
So anything to add before we talk about the very final scene, which is the final shot in fact, which I think was took me by surprise.
Yeah.
And was a great
classic sci-fi.
Yeah, I was going to say it's just sort of a very, it's kind of Twilight Zone-y kind of ending. Woo! So he ultimately chooses to believe the fantasy essentially. That he goes down to Solaris because islands randomly appear. I didn't really understand why that happened, but it happened.
Yes, I think the thoughts, when you think about something a lot, it happens so much, they can build an island.
Yeah.
Not really sure either.
But yeah, he's back at home with his parents, and as the camera zooms out, it reveals that he is on the island in Solaris, living the lie that he's still at home and...
Inception-y.
Yeah, it's quite inception-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, this thing that this someone chose to live in their delusion, that he had a choice, because one of the other scientists say, I think you should go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the last thing he says before it cuts to him apparently being home, and then you find out.
Yeah, I really thought he had gone home. I was so sad.
It's a really sad ending, actually, isn't it? That he chooses. He's so unhappy in reality that
and
he has no choice.
He gets to see his father again.
Yeah, that's true. But he doesn't.
Oh, it's his fake father.
It's a fake father.
Yeah, but
in his mind
he hasn't lost his father.
Maybe the final question then, do you think he knows that these people aren't real and is just wants to live this facade for the rest of his life? Or is he pushed to the point where he's got nothing else to believe but the visitors and what Solaris is telling him, that he's not gone mad per se, but he's been tricked and he now thinks this is reality?
I think it's a choice.
So he's chosen to live a
lie. Yeah, because they're very adamant about the fact that they know their own mind and they know what's happening,
I think you're right.
Aren't
it's
they?
Clear. I mean, I said it's quite ambiguous at times, but I also think it is also very clear that they know that these things aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
He does say, oh, she's not a specimen, she's my wife.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately he does kind of know it's not her.
Yeah, and he talks about Harry as in the past as separate to the Harry he's got now as well.
Yeah, yeah.
To her. It's
two separate people.
Yeah. I feel like I want to believe for his sake that he thinks it's real, because that's such an that's a nicer state of mind to be in. I mean, doesn't the guy that he's in contact with to begin with say something like, oh, you know, I wish I was mad, like madness would be preferable to
that's,
this
that's true actually
so I don't know. I hope he is mad and he does believe it's true, but I don't think he is.
Bit like Shutter Island,
another
I'm just full of all of this.
I think all the way through we've been talking about other films a lot, but I think that's a testament to this film.
Yeah. Well, this is what I mean. It's, it's this film has obviously inspired.
It did it all first, yeah.
Whether it actually physically has or not.
Yeah.
All of these other films. So I would really say, yes, it's a long watch, but if you want to see sort of one of the first sci-fi and where all those ideas were implanted, watch this film, because you see them there for one of the first times.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great place to end. I think you just summed it up.
Nail on the head, Helen.
Yeah.
Right.
So thank you very much for listening. Please do watch the other Tarkovsky films on Curzon Home Cinema. And if you've got any questions for us, you can tweet us at Curzon Cinemas with the hashtag Curzon Podcast. And if you enjoyed the podcast, review us on iTunes. So that's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
See you later.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.